Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. In a week, our nation will pause to recognize the 20th anniversary of September 11th, 2001, and all those who perished in New York and the Pentagon and in a field in Pennsylvania. But this week, overshadowed by headlines about Afghanistan and COVID-19, were ceremonies both in Washington, D.C. and at Pearl Harbor, commemorating the 76th anniversary of the end of World War II. September 2nd was a significant day for all Americans and certainly for people all over the world. But no one appreciated the war's end quite like those who had spent years in captivity as prisoners of war. Here's another date to remember and mark on your calendar. The third Friday in September every year is National POW/MIA Day, honoring prisoners of war and those still missing in action. That falls on September 17th this year. There's likely an observance in your local area that you may want to attend. But for perspective on what victory over Japan and the end of World War II really meant, I want you to hear how Bill Overmyer remembered it. Bill passed away last month at the age of 101 in his beloved Albuquerque, New Mexico. By this time, 76 years ago, he had spent more than 3 years as a prisoner of Imperial Japan.
One day after work, the commandant, who was, we found out that he was a principal at the high school. And he spoke a little English. And we went into the mess hall, just the officers and the non-commissioned officers. And he got up in front, he said, "Peace is smiling." We said, "What'd you say?" "Peace is smiling, goo. The war is over, goo." Hallelujah. That place went up in smoke. He said, "Don't tell the men. Keep it quiet, please." We said, "Yes, we will." Until we got out the door, and we told everybody else as quick as we could.
How do you keep that news to yourself, right?
Anyway, then here came B-29s. "What the heck are they doing this close? Oh, they're dropping parachutes. Oh, that's a 55-gallon drum. Oh, it dropped right in the rice field right outside our camp. A camp of 55 drums of cocoa, 55 drums of sugar, lard, anything else." Boy, we started eating like you can't believe. And I slept next to Cy Serrata. He was in the 31st Infantry at Yokohama. Right, I could touch him every night on that straw mattress. He had gone with us, of course. He was up on a roof. One of those 55 guns hit him on the head.
Oh.
Survived 3 years, and he got, at least he didn't suffer.
So they're dropping supplies to try to keep you alive, and it kills him on the roof.
The chute didn't open.
Wow.
That didn't happen very often, but it did happen. I think I was lucky. I was fortunate in the outcome of everything that happened. We did what we had to do to survive. And you just take it day by day. I learned at Yokohama how little it takes to survive, to live, day after day. You need food, that's a question mark. You need a roof over your head. You need clothes to survive against the elements. And maybe friendship, there wasn't that much of it. But books are peace of mind that you could manufacture or whatever. That's about all you need. You don't need all this fancy living. When we were liberated from Sendai, we got on the train, went up to Yokohama train station. There was American soldiers, officers, and nurses. We saw our first American nurses and workers and so forth. They sure look good, I'll tell you.
That was the late Bill Overmyer explaining what the end of World War II meant to him and other American prisoners of war in September 1945. Meanwhile, on the deck of the USS Missouri, General Douglas MacArthur had his unique way of putting things in perspective. We're going to hear his remarks now from that day, as you would have heard him on the radio 76 years ago, followed by the sentiments of Admiral Chester Nimitz.
My fellow countrymen, today the guns are silent. A great tragedy has ended. A great victory has been won. The skies no longer rain death. The seas bear only commerce. Men everywhere walk upright in the sunlight. The entire world lies quietly at peace. The holy mission has been completed. And in reporting this to you, the people, I speak for the thousands of silent lips forever stilled among the jungles and the beaches and in the deep waters of the Pacific which mark the way. I speak for the unnamed brave millions homeward bound to take up the challenge of that future which they did so much to salvage from the brink of disaster. As I look back on the long, tortuous trail from those grim days of Bataan and Corregidor, when an entire world lived in fear, when democracy was on the defensive everywhere, when modern civilization trembled in the balance, I thank a merciful God that he has given us the faith, the courage, and the power from which to mold victory. We have known the bitterness of defeat and the exaltation of triumph. And from both, we have learned there can be no turning back. We must go forward to preserve in peace what we won in war. A new era is upon us. Even the lesson of victory itself brings it profound concern, both for our future security and the survival of civilization. The destructiveness of the war potential through progressive advances in scientific discovery has, in fact, now reached a point which revises the traditional concept of war. Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Various methods through the ages have been attempted to devise an international process to prevent or settle disputes between nations. From the very start, workable methods were found insofar as individual citizens were concerned. But the mechanics of an instrumentality of larger international scope have never been successful. Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. The problem, basically, is theological and involves a spiritual recrudescence and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advance in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. It must be of the spirit if we are to save the flesh. We stand in Tokyo today, reminiscent of our countryman, Commodore Perry, 92 years ago. His purpose was to bring to Japan an era of enlightenment and progress by lifting the veil of isolation to the friendship, trade, and commerce of the world. But alas, the knowledge thereby gained of Western science was forged into an instrument of oppression and human enslavement. Freedom of expression, freedom of action, even freedom of thought were denied through suppression of liberal education, through appeal to superstition, and through the application of force. We are committed by the Potsdam Declaration of Principles to see that the Japanese people are liberated from this condition of slavery. It is my purpose to implement this commitment just as rapidly as the armed forces are demobilized and other essential steps taken to neutralize the war potential. The energy of the Japanese race, if properly directed, will enable expansion vertically rather than horizontally. If the talents of the race are turned into constructive channels, the country can lift itself from its present deplorable state into a position of dignity. To the Pacific Basin has come the vista of a new emancipated world. Today, freedom is on the offensive. Democracy is on the march. Today, in Asia as well as in Europe, unshackled peoples are tasting the full sweetness of liberty, the relief from fear. In the Philippines, America has evolved a model for this new free world of Asia. In the Philippines, America has demonstrated that peoples of the East and peoples of the West may walk side by side in mutual respect and with mutual benefit. The history of our sovereignty there has now the full confidence of the East. And so, my fellow countrymen, today I report to you that your sons and daughters have served you well and faithfully with the calm, deliberate, determined fighting spirit of the American soldier and sailor based upon a tradition of historical trait as against the fanaticism of an enemy supported only by mythological fiction. Their spiritual strength and power has brought us through to victory. They are homeward bound. Take care of them.
That was General of the Army Douglas MacArthur, Supreme Commander of the Allied Powers. We will now hear Fleet Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, United States Navy, the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet.
On board all naval vessels at sea and in port and at our many island bases in the Pacific, there is rejoicing and thanksgiving. The long and bitter struggle which Japan started so treacherously on the 7th of December, 1941, is at an end. I take great pride in the American forces which have helped to win this victory. America can be proud of them. The officers and men of the United States Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine who fought in the Pacific have written heroic new chapters in this nation's military history. I have infinite respect for their courage, resourcefulness, and devotion to duty. We also acknowledge the great contribution to this victory made by our valiant allies. United we fought, and united we prevail. The port of Tokyo, which was first opened by Commodore Perry in 1853, is now crowded with United States men of war. Today, all freedom-loving peoples of the world rejoice in the victory and feel pride in the accomplishments of our combined forces.
Admiral Chester Nimitz, and before him, General Douglas MacArthur from the battleship USS Missouri on September 2nd, 1945. It's time for our final break, but when we come back, a story you may not have heard about the lengths to which one American went to ensure that a very special flag was present on the mighty Mo for that historic occasion. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.